You're going to love my next guest. Dan Mangena stopped by the show. He is a best-selling author, entrepreneur, philanthropist, and public speaker. He is completely self-made, and he has spent decades perfecting his world-class coaching methodology. His books, podcasts, events, and retreats continue to help captains of industry and private individuals alike to live an abundant, joyful, purpose-driven life. Do not miss this episode. Dan Mangena, next on the Criminal Justice Evolution Podcast. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. That's why we continue to grow. Patrick here. I'm the host and creator of the Top Rank Criminal Justice Evolution Podcast. Top Rank because of you, the listener and supporter. Please subscribe to the show if you're not. Continue to share it with your family and friends. And lastly, give us that 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. We sure would appreciate it. Hey, big shout out to all the brave men and women working in the criminal justice field, whatever you were doing, wherever you were at. Thank you for doing it. Remember, you are honored, cherished, and above all, you are loved. And if you're a first-time listener, welcome. We hope you stick around. We know you're going to love the shows and the content. If you're a long-time listener, welcome back. Thank you for the continued support. You've been there since the beginning, and we sure do appreciate it. We are so honored to be partnered with a company like Detectichem. This amazing and innovative company is helping keep the people that keep us safe every day safer by offering mobile threat detection app-based technology that fits in the palm of their hands, detecting illicit drugs, explosives, now COVID-19. Folks, you need to learn about Detectichem. Again, they can help your organization. You need this technology. Head over to cjevolution.com. You're going to see a link to Detectichem. See how they can help keep your troops safer. I remember when I was still working as a police officer, one of my responsibilities was managing our extra duty program. I want to tell you about a great company called Extra Duty Solutions. I wish I knew about this company back in the day. Now, Extra Duty Solutions helps law enforcement agencies add efficiency and effectiveness to their extra duty programs while allowing them to focus on what really matters, and that's the safety of their citizens. They work with law enforcement agencies everywhere to administer their extra duty programs, and they can help in the following areas: client interaction, scheduling, officer payments, feedback, cash flow management, and so much more. Their services are provided at no cost to the department and a minimal cost to the clients, and their programs can be customized to meet the goals and unique needs of any law enforcement agency. Folks, you need Extra Duty Solution on your side. Head over to extradutysolutions.com. That's extradutysolutions.com, and tell them Patrick for the Criminal Justice Evolution Podcast sent you. On to this amazing show with Dan Mangena. Hello, everybody. Very excited to have my next guest on the show. You probably heard of him, but if you haven't, he's going to tell you about his background, amazing background. Daniel Mangena, welcome, brother. Thank you for being here.
Hey. Thanks for having me, sir.
Oh, man. Thank you. I'm so excited. We connected through Podbooker, and I was like, I gotta get Daniel on the show because I love your message. I just told you, I got done listening to one of your shows, your podcast, which you're going to talk about, Do It With Dan. You know, you had a great guest on. You got a lot of great guests, but for those people who don't know you, Daniel, what's your background, man? Because you struggled a lot in your early years, and you had to overcome a lot. And I'd really love you to talk to you about that.
Well, you know, it's really interesting that. So I spent an entire lifetime struggling socially, having crippling insomnia for many years. And it was when I was 27 years old that I actually found out I've got Asperger's. So I spent my entire life living on the autistic spectrum and not really knowing. But do you know what's most hilarious is that after I was diagnosed, I ended up like dating two people that work with autistic kids. It's like, have you got Asperger's? Why? Where were you? Where were you 20 years ago? Like, where were you? It's like after I've discovered it and I'm like working with it, everybody suddenly realizes what was going on. But it was great for me because I actually had the opportunity to work independently through the challenges of living with autism and having to develop strategies to cope without knowing what they were. So when I knew what I was doing, it's like, oh, okay. So I can look at what my superpowers are. I can work on my strengths. I've got things to be grateful for. I can then be a bit more deliberate with how I'm moving through with this challenge. And it's actually ended up being one of the most amazing things for me. You know, my ability to digest and process information, my capacity for what I do now, even my beyond intention paradigm, the way that I'm able to structure these complicated ideas and put it in a simple process is because of how my brain works. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the road to that was very challenging. There was, you know, a lot of stuff that I wonder if it would have happened had I been aware of my diagnosis, had I not had my diagnosis at all, you know, was I mainstream or neurotypical? But I've been able to take these and allow those experiences to form a platform that allows me to show people, hey, it doesn't really matter where you've come from. It doesn't really matter, much like your message, where you can always change, whether it's a change in your behavior, a change in your way of thinking, a change in your emotional responses, a change in your choices. The experience that you're having of your life can be shifted and can change regardless of what it's been doing up until now.
Yeah, amazing. And for those listeners out there and viewers too, Daniel, who, because I think we've, a lot of people, autism, I think that's, a lot of people have heard of autism. I obviously have, being a first responder, and a lot of people have, but Asperger's, it's not as well known, right? I mean, it doesn't seem as talked about as autism with, you know, than autism. So what's the difference between the two?
Well, the thing is that people like me end up kind of slipping under the radar and just seen as socially awkward, seen in some cases just being rude or seen as just being difficult or stuck in their ways. And what it comes down to ultimately is the wiring of the brain, how the brain is wired up. Now, for someone that's pure autistic, purely neurodiverse, they've got all of that wiring without a couple of pieces of wiring that allows them to communicate what's going on for them internally with their outside, with the outside world. Someone with Asperger's has the wiring, but can communicate with the outside world, albeit that communication happens through that wiring. So maybe quite clunky, may have challenges around it. I, especially over the last, I'd say 10, 11 years, have worked a lot with learning about social dynamics, social constructs. I've done a lot of work with my spiritual and emotional practice to develop meaningful bonds with people. So I actually, I've hacked the system by bypassing the brain and just having genuine connections that are heart-centered rather than being caught up in, oh, my brain wants to do this. And are there challenges? Yes. All my social interactions are still very conscious. There's no automatic patterning for social construct for me. So I have to remember to pause, remember that the other person has something to say. And even though I've got an objective, I need to remember that there are two objectives going on here and we can co-create something. But it's harder to catch because of the fact that we can actually communicate with the outside world.
Well, and it really comes down to, from what I'm hearing, you correct me if I'm wrong, is knowing thyself, right? I mean, you have to dig deep. And I think, you know, that's a problem for probably a lot of people, is they don't dig deep. They don't know themselves as best as they should, whereas you were very cognizant of it. And I mean, you took a tough road to become cognizant.
But the cognizance understatement.
Because you struggled with suicidal thoughts too, Daniel, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And the thing is, you know, you get people that have suicidal attempts. You have people with suicidal thoughts. I was somewhere in the middle. The only reason why I didn't attempt was I didn't want to fail at something else. If I'd had a surefire way that I had certainty around, and actually my I firmly believe it was my Asperger's brain that saved me, because I stopped and went through all of the processes, because everything is step by step in my brain, very sequential and very binary. So I went through the binary process of, okay, here is my objective. This one, A, B, C, D, no, that doesn't work. This one isn't certain and I don't want to fail. This one isn't certain and I don't want to fail. This one isn't certain and I don't want to fail. If I was somewhere where I had access to a firearm, I definitely wouldn't be here right now.
Yeah.
Because that, it wasn't that there was an emotional outburst. It's okay, I've reached a point where everything is just a mess. There is no way through this. I'm probably going to be doing everyone a favor if I'm just not here anymore. And this wasn't like an emotional, oh, I don't want to be here. It was like the only logical outcome I could see was just taking myself out of the equation.
Oh, wow.
But with no means of doing that successfully, I actually, and this is, people laugh at this when they can laugh at it, but I actually set about fixing my manifestation process not so that I could live a better life, but that so that I could succeed at committing suicide.
Wow.
So okay, everything's gone wrong with this manifestation process. There's a bug in the system. Let me find it so that I can properly execute suicide and then do everyone a favor by not being here. But then the really, really funny thing that comes from that, and it's become, you know, a big part of what I teach people now with my work, is that because I spent so much time being obsessed with fixing what went wrong with the system, I was going back over the books that I knew and I didn't know. I was going back over the studying that I'd done, going back to the notes of teachers that I'd had, finding new teachers, looking at popular systems, studying books and working out what was wrong with the system. But I accidentally polluted my mind with so much positivity that that innate knowing that I just didn't need to be anymore got switched.
So that was the aha moment. That was the catalyst.
That was a catalyst. And the funny thing is, people are like, oh, when was, you know, what was it like to come to the realization that you wanted to choose life? It didn't work like that for me. I basically just kind of drifted into life. And wow. Every now and then I still have to remind myself, when faced with the depression hasn't gone, it's still there. It comes from time to time. But I'm resourced now with a new internal environment that faces down that and says, but death isn't the only option. There is the option of life, and here's why.
Yeah.
So I developed accidentally and quite wonderfully, so this internal environment that just accepts that life is not only an option, but it's a beautiful option and one that I can keep choosing.
Yeah, amazing. And that was going to be a question I asked you, and you answered it, Daniel, is if you do you still have bad days? Because everybody does. Still, everybody suffers. Oh, yeah. There's no life is perfect. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, people probably look at some people like you or everybody else, successful people, and say, oh, Dan doesn't have any problems. And I always tell people, Dan has problems just like everybody else does. But hopefully his problem days are eclipsed by the good days. You know.
And you know what? It's being resourced. And this is the thing. I mean, look at for example, the statistics show more teens have died from the mental health challenges of being in lockdown than have died from the coronavirus that the lockdown was meant to save.
It's amazing. It's sad. Not amazing. It's sad.
The statistics of the mental health challenges, AKA people's inability to face the lack of resources to face this current challenge. And it is a big challenge, regardless of whether people believe that things are real or not. And that's not the conversation here. It's just, we're in a world where the consensus is that we're dealing with something that's real. And people, in an attempt, I truly believe, in an attempt to help, are making choices that are having effects that people aren't resourced for. People aren't resourced to know that overnight your business is gone. Overnight, your home is in jeopardy. Overnight, you're forced to be in a home with the family that you actually didn't even realize that you don't know. You're forced to be in silence with your own thoughts. You're forced into a space of loneliness because the only place that you had contact with people was in the workplace or at school, and now you're alone. And people weren't resourced to deal with that. They weren't resourced to deal with that at all.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a tough time. That's an understatement with COVID. And I agree with you, man. I mean, there's people are just getting knocked down. But what advice would you give, Daniel, for people out there who are listening who might be struggling? There's a lot of people who are. Some people aren't. But for the person out there who's struggling, saying, you know what, I'm depressed, man. I'm thinking about taking my own life. I'm thinking about doing something bad. I can't take it anymore. I mean, you've been there. What advice would you give somebody who's listening, who's going through that right now?
So following my journey, in fact, during the journey, during the time when I had my time, I actually did some volunteering for an organization in the UK called the Samaritans. I believe that there's a branch of them in the US too. But what the Samaritans are is a suicide hotline. But the interesting thing about the Samaritans and the training that we get isn't to talk people out of suicide, but to give them space to answer the question, is this really what I want? And, you know, it's not easy because there are people that I spoke with and we find out, you know, they spoke with me and I thought, oh, they're going to choose life, and they took their own life, you know. But ultimately, we create a safe container for people to make a conscious choice about what they want to do, rather than being led by an emotional torrent, rather being led by their perspective on their external circumstances. It's being able to make the choice.
Yeah.
And that's a crazy one for people to understand as a stance, because what do you mean you're just going to let them commit suicide? Well, people have a choice.
Yeah.
But where is that choice coming from?
Yeah.
So someone that's facing a level of darkness that they believe is hopelessness. I want to remind them that there is always hope, and I want to invite them to find some space within themselves to ask themselves, are they prepared to at least give that spark of hope a chance?
I agree with what you said, Daniel. I mean, I think there's always hope. And the way I would, and I probably learned this more as I got older, mm-hmm. the things that we worry about and the things that we think are going to come to fruition, whatever it is, I'm going to lose my house, lose my job. I'm not saying some of that stuff doesn't happen, but a lot of stuff, let me speak from my personal experience. A lot of the stuff I worry about and stress about, if it does come to fruition, it's never as big as it was that I've created it in my mind, mm-hmm. or it doesn't come to pass at all. I'm not saying mm-hmm. that is an end-all, be-all solution to people out there listening that are struggling. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying that has helped me in the past where I am stressed out, I'm worried, I'm depressed about, oh my God, what if this happens? And it, in my experience, again, I can't speak for everybody else. Mm-hmm. I made it so big in my mind mm-hmm. that it was just making mountains out of molehills, you know? And I'm not saying that that's a cure for depression or suicidal thoughts. I'm just saying that
it's creating
that's
space,
helped
though.
Me.
But, you, in, but in what the past you're saying with my is depression. It creates space. It creates space.
Yeah.
Asking these questions, pausing to interrogate the experience rather than being led unconsciously into it, creates space.
Yeah.
And, you know, this may seem completely disassociated, but I've always had a rule with dating that I would never speak about sex until I'd had sex with a woman.
Okay.
but there's a reason why, because even if I was the gods created me as a gift to womankind in the bedroom, and I live up exactly to the narrative that I gave her, in her mind, I have no control over what that image becomes. Conversation leads to expectation. And what I want to kind of bring that seemingly confused thing back into here is that we always have a perspective on what something will be that will be distorted against the truth of what it really is. Mm-hmm. We will always see a problem as more magnificent and wonderful than it is, and a challenge, the solution to a challenge, as less potent than it truly is, because that's what the human mind does. It creates these narratives. And when we're able to just remember that maybe, just like my performance in the bedroom, is not going to be seen the same way in my unconscious mind, I can bring that level of perspective and say, maybe I'm going to give it a chance to tell me what it is, rather than me projecting my ideas about what it is, and then making a choice about how I feel about it after I've actually experienced it.
Yeah. Let's switch a little bit. Let's talk about, I love what you said earlier about manifestation. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that goes along with mindset, right?
Mm-hmm,
I love the topic of manifestation. I love the topic mm-hmm. of visualization, because I think it's very mm-hmm. important. And I know you talk about this in your speeches. I know you talk about this when you coach a lot of people, transformational life coach. But how can you talk about manifestation, and what mm-hmm. advice would you give to the listener on learning how to manifest the things that you want in life?
Mm-hmm. I think the key is that last piece of the statement that you said, what you want in life.
Yeah.
Because if we look to the science and we look to the realities of things, not the latest program that we saw on Instagram or on a YouTube ad about
everywhere
you're going to put on the wall or whatever. If we look at the science of how reality unfolds, what we're looking at is a singular substance, which we generally describe as energy, which fills the space of the smallest component of what we're made of, the electrons, to the 99.9. So 99 point, if we strip each and every one of us down to our smallest measurable thing and open that up, it's 99.9999% energy. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're looking at. We're looking at this same substance at different measurable frequencies, operating in different compounds and combinations, but it's that one pure substance. And that one pure substance doesn't have an opinion about the shape that it takes. It simply responds to the expectation of the observer as to what form it's going to take. This was the accidental byproduct of Dr. Young, mm-hmm. when he initially did the double split experiment. He was looking at the particle and the wave and how they operate. But when the observer was taken out of the equation, this light beam that was split and forming back into a singular light beam, when there was no observer, the results were randomized. And this wasn't actually what they were going out to prove. And, you know, subsequent researchers weren't necessarily going out to prove that, but the impact that this finding had on the quantum model can't be denied. And that's that when we look at the pure potential that's available for our reality as to what shape it takes, it becomes formed solely on the basis of what we, as an observer, expect it to do.
Yeah.
So if the simplest compound of reality takes shape according to the command of expectation, that means that everything that makes up our reality, everything that's going to unfold in our life, happens because of the expectation we have as to what shape it's going to take, how much money I'm going to make, if I'm going to have any, the relationships I'm going to have, if I'm going to have one, the health in my body, all of that's responding to an expectation.
And I love what you said about energy, because we all are energy.
Mm-hmm.
Do you, and I think you were alluding to this, but I'm going to ask you anyway, do you believe like in the law of attraction? Like you're a magnet, you're going to magnetize things to you. Because I believe that, you know, if I'm thinking negative thoughts, going back mm-hmm. to energy, mm-hmm. if I'm thinking negative thoughts and my life sucks and I hate this, I don't like this, mm-hmm. I believe what I put out there to the universe, mm-hmm. it's going to give me in return. Now, I'm not saying mm-hmm. you're not going to have bad days and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just saying, for the most part, if I'm constantly on that wavelength, if I'm constantly emitting that energy, I believe that the universe is going to give, God, whoever, is going to bring that back to me.
I mean, if we overlay that idea on the science, what you're saying is true. And there's actually a logical, sequential series of steps that goes through. If I'm thinking negative thoughts, that means that my internal mental environment is negative, which means that the expectations which are being projected into reality to form my world are going to be based in that negative environment.
Exactly.
Which means the substance of those things is going to be negative. So everything that's going to show up for me is going to happen against the backdrop of that propensity towards negativity. Ergo, my thoughts become things, and those things that my thoughts become are the fruit of the seeds, and the seeds are negative, the fruits are going to be negative. This is why mindset has got such an important part of the manifestation process, not just what meditation you're doing or what chant you're doing or what yoga pose you're doing, because those have an impact on your emotional state. But unless that emotional state is followed through with a deliberate direction of my mental space towards expecting what I want, I'm always going to come unstuck. Always. So the way that I look at the manifestation process is simply this. Everyone's manifesting all of the time. Manifestation isn't special. Everybody's doing it, but we're not doing it consciously. What we really want to do when we're talking about manifestation is be very deliberate and conscious of what we're calling into our experience. It's taking the unconscious process of unfolding our reality and interjecting conscious choice into what those outcomes are. And that means that we need to honor the process of pure thought into physical matter, which is first and foremost experienced as a vibrational wave, which we call our emotional response. So our emotions are the first point of contact between non-physical and physical. We all have heard of crimes of passion, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
That's because our emotional state has an impact on our thought processes. And we have mind over matter because our thoughts affect the neural pathways in the brain, which literally constricts or expands to give us the landscape of choices that we're able to make. So what I'm able to do physically as I move through reality, all of these things must be in alignment for me to create any outcome. What I'm feeling, what I'm thinking, and also what I'm doing. When any one of these pieces are out of whack, we lose the connection with what we want to create. And that's why manifestation doesn't work for some people, because they just visualize and take care of the mind, but their emotional state is out of whack. So
they're not feeling it.
They're not feeling it. So as soon as they stop visualizing, their default emotional state, which is contradictory, kicks in. Their unconscious environment still continues to perpetuate what they don't want. They keep witnessing what they don't want, making actions, choices, and moving through physical reality against the backdrop of what they don't want. And then they don't get what they do want, versus consciously choose what I want, consciously choose to be emotionally aligned with what I want, consciously choose to be mentally aligned with what I want in terms of my mental narratives, my visualization and so forth, and then consciously moving through my world in expectation of what I want, because that's what commands and locks in all of that good stuff to create the reality that I want.
Amazing. And I know you got a book about money, and we all want more money. So, but that's really what you're saying. I mean, it applies to everything, relationships,
everything.
Money, career,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It all applies to everything.
Yeah. The rules of the universe don't change based on what we're looking to create. The same rules.
Yeah.
What am I feeling? What am I thinking? What am I doing?
There's a story, you know, in The Secret. I'm a big fan of The Secret. Mm-hmm. And I think the author, Rhonda Byrne, talks about the topic of money. Mm-hmm. And manifesting money, you know, the law of attraction regarding money. And I think she makes a reference, I'm paraphrasing, where you could take all the money in the world, mm-hmm. equally distribute it out to everybody. Mm-hmm. And sooner or later, mm-hmm. the money is going to get back in the hands, because 90% of the wealth is within 10% of the people mm-hmm. In the world. But sooner or later, she surmises that money is going to get back into those hands because of that vibration, that energy, mm-hmm. that manifestation that some people have, a lot of people mm-hmm. don't. Mm-hmm. So it's an interesting point, but I mm-hmm. agree with you 100%.
And you know, there's another interesting statistic that will actually, you know, speaks to that. 90% of lottery winners end up exactly where they were within 5 years.
Exactly. Why is that, brother? Because that's exactly what you're saying. They're not sending out that vibration. They're sending out that signal. Mm-hmm. And instead of, you know, because, and I do think, and you tell me if I'm wrong, is they have, I think a lot of money relationships between people and money are due to their upbringing. A lot of people are brought up to think money is evil. It's, you know, only mm-hmm. rich people have money and they're evil. Mm-hmm. And they do evil things. When in reality, I think it's the opposite. I think there's, you know, a lot of rich people that do a lot of good with their money. And mm-hmm. I think money is just a tool. It's going to be whatever you want it to be. So if you're an evil person, money is going to amplify that. If you're a good person and you believe in philanthropy, it's going to amplify that. I don't know what
you're saying. I'm with you 100%. And you know what? It's like, money is just sitting there, you know. I mean, I'm in Mexico, so we spend pesos, right? So I've got like this 500 peso note. Mm-hmm. This is a piece of paper that only has meaning because we attribute meaning to it. It doesn't have an opinion. It's just a piece of paper.
It's just a tool.
That's all it is. It's a tool that has no opinion of its own. It just directs, gives me either more choice or less choice. It can give me anxiety or it can give me hope. It's me that attributes meaning. If we speak about, you know, universal law, the law of relativity, everything just is until we as humans start to either compare it to something, whether that's real, or compare it to an idea, or to project something into it. Money is just numbers on a screen for most part that's given value because of the meaning that people attribute to it. And when people say, oh, you know, rich people, this, no, there are people. There are people that would be buttholes whether they had money or not.
Exactly.
There are people that would be great humans whether they have money or not. All that we're doing by projecting their energy into it is actually creating a disconnect between us and our capacity to have more of that thing that would just give us more choice and more capacity to express who we are, butthole or not.
Yeah, exactly. Now let's talk about meditation for a minute.
Yeah.
Why do you tell people to stop meditating? But I like meditating, but why do you tell people, and I respect your opinion, but why do you tell people to stop meditating?
Let's breathe on this for a second. You haven't turned the engine on your car. You're not moving. Can it stop?
No.
It's not started.
Oh, it's never started. Yeah. That's a trick question, Daniel.
So someone who's never meditated doesn't meditate, doesn't even know what meditation is. Does that statement have any relevance to them?
No.
So the statement isn't don't meditate. In fact, I encourage everybody to explore whether meditation is something that supports them in what they're doing, but don't stop at the meditation, stop the meditation and take care of the rest of the process.
Ah, I get it.
So many of us get caught up just taking care of our spiritual experience, our energy, our vibe, our frequency, and lose sight of the fact that unless we consciously direct ourselves to have our mind, our mindset, our thoughts, our beliefs, our mental narratives, our mental visioning connect with what we're praying for, meditating for, chanting about, it's not going to happen. I know people have come to my work, have been doing all this meditation stuff for decades, not getting any results and thinking there's something wrong with the meditation. No, the meditation's great, but you stopped at the meditation. You didn't allow that beautiful, wonderful, yummy energy to translate into the other areas of your life because you got up from your meditation and went around with the same negative thoughts. You got up from your meditation and continued to be a butthole to people. You got up from your meditation and didn't do anything. Let's say, for example, I want a loving, healthy relationship. It doesn't matter how many hours a day I'm meditating about it, if when I get up, the opportunities availed to me for me to take action to move towards that relationship aren't taken up. Or I'm continuing to fill my mind with imagery and inputs that supports me believing that relationships are hard, love isn't worth it, it's always going to be sad ending. All of that energy sitting there like, well, bro, we got the ball rolling, and then you stopped. So when I encourage people to stop meditating, I'm not saying don't meditate. What I'm saying is take all of that energy and keep it moving. Pass the baton on to the rest of your creation process. Allow it to move and germinate into all of you so that you can create what you really deserve.
I love it. And I agree with you because I think we live in an instant gratification society. And I think there's so much hype. I mean, meditating, wasn't very popular just a handful of years ago. Now it's mainstream. Mm-hmm. Everybody's talking about it. But mm-hmm. I agree with you, Daniel. I think a lot of people just sit down, they meditate, close their eyes, do whatever for mm-hmm. 10 minutes, and they expect that everything to change now in their world. But yet they mm-hmm. carry, like you said, they carry that negativity, mm-hmm. And that same feeling, and then they expect things to change. And mm-hmm. meditation, the way I look at it, because I was a non-believer, brother, just a handful of years ago. But I did exactly what you said to do. At first week or two, I was like, ain't working. But then I started changing my mindset. I brought that positivity or that peacefulness that I was getting from meditation along with other mm-hmm. feelings. And I was spreading that out throughout my day. Mm-hmm. Now I don't start a day without meditating or mm-hmm. Practicing or, starting a day in gratitude, all those things I talk about. Mm-hmm. So I agree with you. I mean, a lot of people they want the quick fix. Mm-hmm. And I don't think there's no such thing as a quick fix, right?
I don't think so either. I mean, look, infinite possibility. And this is where I think people get caught up because, I know people that have just meditated and gotten stuff. Cool. I get it. They've just prayed and not left a finger and,
Doesn't happen.
But possibility doesn't equate directly to probability.
Yeah, exactly.
And so we could just sit in yoga pose all day and wait for us to get to such a point where the heavens open and everything falls into our lap. Or we could cut the process and just work with what's available. It's like someone sitting in a bountiful restaurant and saying, oh, no, I think I'm going to go and learn to hunt. And then I'm going to learn to skin my rabbit. And then I'm going to learn to make a fire from scratch. Learn how to make firewood. I'm going to learn how to plant the trees that make the wood. You're in a restaurant. Just get up and order your meal. Order the meal from the restaurant. We don't need to go through this whole process. Now, is there something to be said about the process of learning to do those things? Yeah, but do it on a full stomach.
Yeah.
Do it on a full stomach. If you want to go and learn the metaphysics of instant manifestation and go and spend 20 years in the mountains with the Buddhas, cool. But right now there are bills to pay. Right now you've got family to support. Right now you have a body that needs to be nourished. Take care of that first. Get up from your meditation mat, go and take care of that and be in a conducive space to go and explore these other adventures too, because a lot of people are just running away from life, in my humble opinion.
No, I agree with you.
I need to go and do my new plant ceremony. I need to go and see my shaman. I need to go and explore my part. No, you need to take care of
your do you think, Daniel, you talk to a lot of people, brother. I mean, think that, and I'm a big believer mm-hmm. in action behind your thoughts and all that stuff. I agree mm-hmm. with that. But do you think part of the problem is, people and their associations, meaning who they're surrounding yourself with?
100%.
The people they're surrounding themselves with, 100%. Because I believe that as you journey throughout life, the people in your life, I'm not talking about family and maybe even mm-hmm. family, they're going to change, the people mm-hmm. in your life. And mm-hmm. I want to surround myself with people that are like you, lifting me up, mm-hmm. inspirational, motivational. And I think that's a big part. There's so many components to this, in mm-hmm. my opinion. Mm-hmm. there's the intention, there's the energy, there's the thought, there's a vibration, there's a manifestation, but it's also the physical part of it, where it's the people that we're associating with.
The environment.
Yeah, the environment. How important is that to you?
The people, places, and things in our environment are contributing to the loop that's continuing to expand and contract and become the world around us. The thoughts that I'm thinking are going to be influenced by the inputs that I'm having, and that's going to be informed by my environment. So the people, places, and things in my environment. the neural pathways in my brain are going to be impacted by those thoughts. And then that's going to be looking out to my environment to see what potentials and choices I have. The people, places, and things in my environment are going to impact that. If we want to go down the rabbit hole, the energetic bodies, which is measurable, if you get, I think it's Curley in photography, you can actually measure the energetic bodies of people expanding beyond their physical body. That's rubbing and connecting with people. When we're holding hands with people, us exchanging this space, there's an energetic exchange happening here that's impacting me and impacting you and creating a new common field, which is going to impact your energy field, which is going to be experiences, your emotions, which is going to impact your thinking, which is going to impact your neural pathways, which is going to impact your physical environment too. So all of this is being impacted. So when we are filling up our life with people that complain, people that drain us, people that pull us down or tell us that we're not going to get anywhere, or just keep us locked in, even if it's a positive place, a limited place, then we're not available to expand into the fullness of all that we are. Mm-hmm. So creating, I love to say curate, I ruthlessly curate my environment, ruthlessly, of the people, places, and things in it, where I am, how I feel in that environment, and making sure not only that I'm getting, but that I'm adding. If I'm not adding.
Yeah. Yeah, just take.
It's just taking, then that's not helping me either, because it's still creating an imbalance, and nature's in perfect balance in all levels. So that imbalance I'm creating is going to affect another part of my life too. If I'm just taking from you in terms of our relationship, it's going to impact my money and impact my health.
Yeah.
But if I'm always giving, then I'm actually creating a reverse polarity imbalance. That means I'm always going to be getting and receiving too. And that's why I always give.
Yeah. I mean, and the same goes for circling back to money really quick. The more, you mean, look at very wealthy people. Doesn't it seem like, Daniel, the more people give, the more they get back,
yeah,
you know, in return.
So the universe works.
Yeah, that's how the universe works. So if you give love, if you give caring and compassion, you're going to get that back. Usually double, triple what you give, because the universe.
The universe is expansive. It's expansive. It doesn't cheat us. God doesn't cheat us. He always gives more. Like, God doesn't shortchange. And I love to say as well, I think sometimes, you know, just to quickly touch on this money thing as well, people forget that money comes from other people. Mm-hmm. Even if you win the lottery, that still comes from the accumulation of lottery tickets other people have bought. It still comes through the lottery commission, which is humans. It still comes through a machine that was made by humans. It still comes to you through other people. Even if I've won the lottery, I've still invested my time and my energy to buy a lottery ticket. I still have to move through time and space to go and cash my check. If we're talking about business now, people say, I want to manifest some clients for my business. Or you could just go out and serve people. And if you go out and serve people with a giving heart, the universe must respond by you receiving back something. Now, it might not always be immediately money. It might be in your health. It might be in relationships, but God will never shortchange you if you just keep giving with a truly giving heart.
I love it. And really, one last thing about money is that I think a lot of people have this scarcity mindset, whether it's in money, whether it's in relationships, and I just personally believe that there's more than enough to go around. So if you win $100 million, Daniel, in the lottery, if I have the attitude, oh, well, I guess there's not enough for me now, since Daniel just won all this money, I guess there's only so much of it to go around. That's what, like we were talking about, the universe is going to give me back that. Instead, what I could do is really be happy for you and say, you know, I am really generally happy and feel what it would be like to have that money.
There's really something powerful about celebrating others. And I think sometimes we lose sight of the fact that gratitude doesn't need to be about us. We can be grateful for other people's experiences too, and actually siphon off the expansive overflow of that and create it. There's so much around gratitude and celebrating. And when we do that from an expansive, abundant place, it again impacts our emotional field, therefore our energy field, our expectations, and commands energy to collapse around us in a completely new and expansive way. Ergo, we're happier people with more abundance in our love and our health and our relationships and our joy and our money too, because God doesn't shortchange us.
No.
And I think just to remember that is a great one for the listeners to carry away.
Yeah. And we've all heard of the saying, you know, success is the key to happiness. I think it's reverse. Actually, this is a quote. I can't remember who said it. Success. Happiness is the key to success.
Definitely.
So be happy now. I want you to really quick, brother, I want you to tell people about your amazing podcast. And I want to talk really quickly about your books, because you got a lot of books out there. So let's start with the podcast, Do It With Dan.
Yeah, podcast is Do It With Dan. We've just launched this month, like a business segment that we do on a Monday that kind of takes the kind of conversations I like to have, these expansive conversations around business and creating value for people, because I think that adds to the world. And then we always have some interviews and some little snippets over the course of the week. So that's doitwithdanpodcast.com, or you can get that information on the website.
Yeah, and I'll have it linked up in the show notes. And let's talk about your books really quick. How many books you got out there? You got four or five?
I've got four.
Four.
Where I'm the writer, and then I'm a guest in a couple of books. I'm going to be in a book with Jack Canfield this year.
Oh, I was amazing. In a book with one of Chicken my mentors. Chicken Soup of the Soul.
Yeah.
Chicken Soup for the Soul. Jack Canfield's awesome.
Yep. I actually got interviewed by him at the back end of last year. That's going to be up. I think that airs on NBC next week. So I'm really excited about that.
Amazing.
I was in a book with another one of my mentors, Greg Reed, last year, which was really cool. I really enjoyed that. So I'm a guest in a couple of books, but I've got four books. I've got one on the abundance of time and how to master time. It's called From Time to Time. I've got a book on my ideas around taking the idea of purpose and making it a bit more tangible. That's the Dreamers Manifesto. So I'm Dreamer CEO all over social media. My website is Dream with Dan, and the Dreamers Manifesto is the name of that book. I wrote a book called Stepping Beyond Intention, which was all about my Beyond Intention model that came from my journey and how to create and manifest. And then my most recent book is The Money Game, taking those principles, a very short book, taking those principles, alignment, creating that expectation, and allowing our reality to be a more abundant one.
Daniel, I could talk to you all day, brother.
Likewise.
I've
got to get you on Do It With Dan as well.
Yeah, anytime, man. I'd love to come on, Daniel Mangena. I love this interview. You're such an amazing guest. Everything is going to be linked up in the show notes, folks, where you can find Dan's books, everything. My friend, much success to you in the future.
Likewise.
Yeah, anything you need from me, please reach out to me, brother. It's been an honor.
Oh, looking forward to continuing to connect. And I just love what you're doing with people. You're out there. I mean, right now, especially people that are out on the front line. And again, you know, sometimes people, especially the conspiracy theorists, whether it's conspiracy theorists or conspiracy truth, the reality is people are out there on the front line doing their best to make this time bearable and successful for people.
Yeah.
And I think regardless of your opinion about whole ideas, there are real humans on the front line that are doing their best to actually serve and protect and help and heal people. And I just want to salute people in all different colors, all different parts of the world that listen to this, that are out there on the front line. Thank you for your service.
Amen, brother. Thank you so much, Daniel. And again, I hope to talk to you down the road, sir.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast. For more strategies for self-improvement and resources based on today's episode, be sure to head to cjevolution.com. You can also connect to Patrick directly on social media at @Pat_Fitzgibbons with any questions, comments, or concerns. We look forward to helping you find more personal success on the next episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast.